Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
When my mother was pregnant with me, a party of Klansmen on horseback surrounded our house in Omaha, Nebraska. They brandished guns and shouted for my father to come out. My mother went to the door where they could see her pregnant condition and told them that my father was in Milwaukee preaching.
He's in Milwaukee preaching.
Now, these hooded Klansmen said the good white Christians would not stand for his troublemaking and to get out of town. Every window with their rifle butts before riding off into the night. They rode off into the moonlight on their horses as suddenly as they had come.
That was the case of Mrs. Reed, Mary Ruth Reed. She was about, I think, 7 or 8 months pregnant. And this man, white man, came to her house and he tried to get her to go to Baylor, and she resisted, and he beat her, started attacking her.
The struggle went into the field between two houses, and her white neighbor saw Medlin beating her and pulling at her clothing and ran out. And she and her children were fighting with him, and the white woman came out, and she saw what had happened, and he eventually left without having raped her, but he had tried.
So what had happened was that during this time, some men in the community, this woman also had some brothers, had 3 or 4 brothers, and the men in our guard said that we should kill this man.
Rob said, no. Let's let the law handle it. So, and Rob really believed in the law during those days.
They brought this man, Lewis Medlin, the white man, brought his wife and set him at his side. All during the time the trial was on it. His lawyer got up and said, "Judge, Your Honor, this man is not guilty, but he was just drinking, having a little fun." Said, "You see this woman sitting here at his side? This is the pure flower of life, God's greatest gift to man, this white woman. And do you think that he would leave this pure flower of life for that?" And so, that was the end of the trial.
They found him not guilty and dismissed the case. At that point, every black woman in the courtroom was in tears and angry and ready to do something. And they took the accuser out the back door. They took them out the back door. And when we all met down where Rob was, and he saw what our condition was and how, and one woman said, "These people have declared open season on black women. What are you going to say now? What are we going to do now?
City police in Chicago murdered Fred Hampton.
It had happened apparently about 4 o'clock in the morning on December 4th. I didn't hear about it until 6 o'clock that night because I wasn't in town. And they popped this picture up on the screen. Actually, 2 pictures, one of Fred Hampton and one of Mark Clark. And I was just stunned. I was staring at the screen and I realized I was crying.
They shot that place up in ways you couldn't believe. His wife, pregnant, shot up in the bed there. She survived, as did the fetus, but Fred's body was riddled. The walls of the room, riddled. I mean, you could count scores of bullet holes there. He never got out of the bed. He was murdered right there. 2:30 in the morning, they claim they're serving a search warrant. But don't we know anything about human rights? You don't serve a search warrant at 2:30 in the morning. You don't come crashing in with guns blazing and kill people asleep in their beds in the United States of America, or do you?
The government raided every Panther's house, especially the ones they felt like could do the most damage as an orator. So they just burst in and put a gun to my mother's head and said, "Don't move, you're under arrest." They treated them like less than human. My mother was pregnant with me while she was in prison. She was her own attorney, never been to law school. She was facing 300 and something odd years. One black woman pregnant beat the case. Mm-hmm. I just go to show you the strength of a black woman and the strength of the oppressed. And a month after she got out of prison, she gave birth to me. So I was cultivated in prison. My embryo was in prison.
Did you see that girl walk down the street with the braids and she was pregnant? She see me in the street, don't say nothing. I wish she would have said something. I would have gave that bitch a brand new face with this smile.
She said,
she ain't even no competition. That's why I wouldn't even fight her again. She wasted my motherfucking time and breath. I could have been eating a sandwich right from there and there. That girl fucked with the wrong person. She trying to set me up. She knows she's pregnant. She'll get me locked up. I went to jail one time. You don't want to be over no that. No, you don't want to be over no jail for no petty ass shit.
Oh, you damn pregnant piece, God.
Context of white supremacy, Gusty Renegade, and for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Monday, January 9th, 2017. So I have been told. This was not a planned broadcast. Most of the things that I had been engaged in for the weekend were not planned per se, but it was a constructive weekend, had a good time, constructive activity with other non-white people. And it was so interesting that I thought it may be of interest to some of our cows listening audience. It did directly address racism, white supremacy, so I thought it might be worthwhile to share a quick tidbit. So I think our female caller in Michigan listening in, lovely black mother herself, she's dialed in many times. I think she was sabotage. Racist did not want her to continue to call in. I think she generally would ask, who do you think is most confused about racism, white supremacy, white people, non-white people? That was one of her staple questions, among many others, but see her listening live. Other folks, if you are awake, check in the program. You happen to be up early. Let me see. just some of the other Cows listeners who keep odd hours, and even some of our listeners in different parts of the world, they are awake. So I just wanted to message to let them know. Okay, no more typing. I don't have my normal headset that I would typically operate with, so I'm using a different mic, so you can the sound quality will be a little different. And again, this was not planned. I'm just doing a little extra work in the hope putting extra or better energy for 2017. 2016 was grueling for many people. That even came up today. I certainly felt that way, and in fact, I can empathize a lot more. I think one of the things that we've talked about, I know Isabel Wilkerson, the lovely Isabel Wilkerson in The Warmth of Other Suns, a lot of the people that she talked to, Ida Mae Gladney and Robert Pershing Foster, a lot of those black people said that they had not been talking about the things that they experienced because it was so gruesome and painful that they just, you know, wanted to move on with their lives, try to recover as best they could and not have to re-experience, relive that trauma. And I feel the exact same way about 2016. It was so traumatic for me personally and just for, I think, a lot of victims of racism that I was doing the exact same pattern of, I don't want to think about it. I don't want to review it. I'm just glad we survived it. Let's move forward in the best way that we can. Literally, because I mean, it was a grueling year from beginning to end. But I think if given time to recuperate and be in a better spot, I think I would be more than willing to review it. And just wow, what we had to survive, what we had to endure for that calendar year. It was wow. Words fail to adequately capture. But 2017, we're going to make every effort to have mass improvement for 2017. That said, the whole purpose for this program, and even if I can give a quick pause, the audio clip that you heard at the beginning, I didn't make that today. That's an audio clip from 5 years ago, since we are slowly encroaching on our 8-year anniversary. That audio clip was the segment I used to introduce Shafia Monroe. She is the founder of the International Center for Traditional Childbearing, where they coach, train midwives, doulas for birth care, natural, healthy birth care for the child, the mother, the father, everyone. Great information, great resource. You can check them out online, International Center for Traditional Childbearing. Great information. But we had her on the program in 2012, and that was how I started the program, just to show the racism, white supremacy, that war begins before you are even born. The war is already being waged against you as a black person. And just it had been a while, like years, since I'd heard that introduction. But quality work, I think. Even the segment towards the end where that was from the documentary Boys of Baraka, where these were black people in Baltimore. And she was saying, you know, I'll smack that pregnant, you know, you heard from. Great film, got all these reviews. White people come in and save the Negro children in Baltimore from being around those savages who are talking about striking pregnant black mothers, and they take them off to Africa to have a wonderful learning experience there. Yes, Boys of Baraka, if people saw the film. Anyway, I chose that clip because I attended Rare. I generally do not hang out. I don't do crowds. I don't do parties. I don't do kicking it. Like, I generally keep to myself to do counter-racist study or whatever else I'm doing in my day. But, you know, I'm not kicking it with an entourage under any circumstances. Two non-white people that I do know, constructive folks, talk about racism. The one of the two that I have known the longest, our entire relationship began around racism, white supremacy. And so they, male and a female, they're having a child. They had a baby shower. The child's supposed to be next month. And it was just a great experience. I was really glad that I attended, even though that's normally not my thing. I was even thinking this might have been the first baby shower that I have attended since I was in the womb. Maybe not, that long, but I mean, it has been a while since I have been at a baby shower, but it was great. It was lots of great vittles and just great all the way around. Glad that I went. I was able to participate in the cooking effort. In fact, this kind of sets up how the racism angle came in, even though it would have already been there. Just, you know, black mother or a pregnant non-white person, you already should be talking about racism and your plan for your child, etc. Anyway, the racism angle came in because I've known, as I said, one of these people I've known almost a decade, long time, lots of conversations about white supremacy. He's read Mr. Fuller's work, participated in this program, whole nine. And the other individual that I have known not quite as long, the black female, she also a lot less confused about racism, always down to have honest conversation. But having known them, at least one of them, for a very long time, and I was did some of the prep work for this event, went in and helped cook. I was messaging folks, handmade egg rolls, participated in making and cooking. In fact, I was participating in doing a lot of cookwork and other stuff. I forgot that I participated in making the egg rolls, literally rolling them and the cooking, the whole nine, when credit was being given for the egg rolls being good. And they were like, "Oh, you cooked the egg rolls." I was like, "Oh, no, I didn't cook the egg rolls." And then I think by the time the event was over and I was sitting there, I was like, "Oh, wow, I did cook a lot of those, like dozens of those egg rolls. Dang, I should have taken the credit." Anyway, so there was a lot of effort, the backstory behind all of that, because I've known these folks, very comfortable with them, had many, many, many hours of conversations about racism with them individually, collectively, the whole nine. And, you know, I put in my sweat equity preparing for the event and cooking and the whole nine. I felt super comfortable at this event, even though I didn't know most of the people. I think it was about 30, 40 people at the shower. And they kind of went around in a circle where it was like, you know, tell something about yourself, who you are, something about yourself, how you came to be at the event, you know, today, the baby shower. So it comes to be my turn. And I said, I'm going to introduce myself as a victim of white supremacy and see what happens. And it's mostly non-white people, I would say. I think there were four individuals who could be classified as white. I didn't get to ask them. One of them, someone had already alerted me that this person was white. So one of them, I have no doubt. And the other three, they would just be on the racist suspect list to me. Anyway, so I'll say it and see what happens. And so no one said anything. No one came up to me to ask, why would you say such a thing or anything like that. However, one of the individuals that I already knew was a white person, was told was white, the energy, oh, I mean, it was palpable. Like when we crossed paths after I had said, yes, I am a victim of white supremacy, and then, you know, went on about, you know, how I came to be there and all that. But it was so palpable that I had to say something about it later on. I didn't make a scene then, but I did say something about it later because I felt it was directly connected to me speaking truthfully about white supremacy and not using any nonsense language of white privilege. And I'm a victim of prejudice. I'm a victim of any. No, I'm a victim of white supremacy. And I'm not encouraging anybody else to start a riot or a scene. I can only explain that I knew the relationships that I had with the people that were the only reason I was present. They would have encouraged me to say, absolutely, get up there and do that, which is exactly what they did. In fact, I knew it would have been disingenuous to those relationships to not do that, because the person that I've known the longest, nearly a decade, we met talking about, I would say that's how we met, me saying I'm a victim of white supremacy. I mean, it would invalidate the last decade of, you know, what we have gone through. So, I mean, I guess that would be number one, to try to make sure as many relationships that you have, that is a core aspect of your relationship, being able to speak truthfully about racism, white supremacy. And I know that is a rare thing to, at least that's been my experience, that could be a rare thing to find, but really try to nourish that and encourage that in your relationships. I think that will give you, that can help give you courage, and it can even help give you opportunities to be able to speak and do things to address racism, white supremacy. That would be one. And I think it's constructive to take those type of examples, just because you never know who's listening. You never know what can happen. Just even if it had just been the exchange, like I didn't have an exchange with this white woman. If it had been different circumstances, I would have felt like, man, I should ask some questions to this white. Are you white? That would be number one. What's your definition of racism? You just go down the line with whatever. Have you had sexual intercourse with a non-white person? You can just have your whole battery of questions that you want to ask. Who did you vote for in the last election? What do you think about 53% of white women voters supporting Donald Trump? You just have your whole battery of questions to ask. But under the circumstances, you know, I was not going to engage in all that. Maybe I should have, but I did make a note. I did bring it up later, and that was awesome as well. That's another thing I found, that sometimes it's great just to be able to have folks where you can speak honestly about racism. You can share those ideas, and just sometimes I think it's great when you can have your counter-racist insight substantiated. Not saying that people just always tell you that you're right about things, but I think so much of the energy and the racist logic, the white supremacist logic and white supremacist reasoning that we get, it just reinforces racism. And anytime that you're using counter racist logic to get to truth, it's, oh no, you're talking crazy, or you hate white people, or anything like that. It's not even, you know, making an honest assessment of what you're saying. It's just rejecting it because what you're doing doesn't support white supremacy. And that's all the logic that we have going right now, is in support of white supremacy. We really want to make sure we're using counter-racist logic to produce truth, justice, moving forward. But it's great when you can be substantiated by other victims of racism, where they can, no, you're not crazy. You're not having an odd experience. Yes, what you're experiencing is racism, white supremacy, and you are decoding it accurately. With that, I can't get into all the details because I'm trying to have like what they call boundaries, right? So that I'm not just going to blab about everything that happened. It was lots of dialogue. I was able to have hours of conversation with a mother-to-be about racism, which was grand. Definitely something that I would encourage, because it's something we should be thinking about. You know, just I was saying on the compensatory call-in, I always appreciate and make an effort to include segments so that you can hear what's happening to black children, whether it's incidents in school, like the one we heard this past weekend, where they made the Snapchat video of the young child, like in 11, he was like 11 or 12, made a Snapchat calling him a nigger and all this. And certainly the incident that happened in North Carolina with the young black female being savagely thrown on the ground. These sort of things are happening all the time. If you're going to have a black child, you need to seriously think about your counter-racist strategy as it applies to protecting as best you can a black child in a world of white terrorism. That really needs to be at the forefront of your mind. And it was just great. I was just glad to, and listening, it's not even, you know, Gus getting, going in and lecturing anything like that, just listening and hearing what some of her concerns were, as a black mom, as a black female, and, you know, having a black child and what that's going to entail. It was just incredible. And resources, too. I'd say that's another thing. I'm so glad the work we've done here at the program, and to be able to share content. Shafia Monroe of the International Center for Traditional Childbearing. And even I discussed Medical Apartheid. I said that's one of the best books that we read during 2015. And she had that whole section, Harriet Washington, in the book, where she talked about how racists, they deliberately suppressed the expertise, medical expertise of black people from the continent when they came here, about child rearing and doulas. They suppressed all of that, stopped actively, sought to criminalize and stop black people from carrying on those traditions of promoting health for black mothers and black children and whole black families, to stop that. And then they took all that information so that now the poster child
for natural childbirth and just all of that, being a doula, being a midwife, breastfeeding, giving natural childbirth and not being in the hospital. Now the poster child for that is some white woman, when nothing is more bogus than that. I mean, they're struggling with fertility all the time. But just being able to discuss some of that material and the programs that we have done on this here broadcast over the years, many of them. Dorothy Roberts, sing her praises all the time, both Shattered Bonds and Killing the Black Body, those just incredibly important texts. We had Dorothy Roberts on the program three times. We discussed both of those books specifically, Killing the Black Body and Shattered Bonds, which every black mother on the planet, you should read those books. They should be in your library, as well as Medical Apartheid. Extremely important information. But just to be able to discuss some of those ideas, and I mean, you talk about serious dialogue about racism, white supremacy. There it is, having a child. Serious, serious business. With that, if folks, I really just wanted to do a quick word. This was not going to be anything lengthy. I was even kind of timing myself as I went along to say I think we should be able to get this done in 30 minutes or less. If folks that are listening have any comments that they would like to share, if we have any black parents, black mothers, anything that they would like to add in, feel free. Like I said, it was great to be able to have that opportunity to say, yes, I am a victim of white supremacy in front of a group of people. And then, as a result of me saying that, later on in the day, one of the black people that was in attendance said, oh, yes, I saw some of the people seemed like they might have not been pleased about you saying that at the event. I was like, oh, wow, that's interesting, because I wasn't really paying that much attention. I was, you know, like I said, just kind of chilling and enjoying some of the delicious egg rolls that I did help make, roll, cook, the whole nine, and other great victuals. But it was wowee, always grand when you get an opportunity to talk about racism, white supremacy, and encourage, participate in other people being more willing to talk about that experience and how it applies in their lives. We have S. Dot. S. Dot, black parent, on the line. Do you have a commentary you wanted to share, sir? S. Dot, are you with us? Did you have commentary you wanted to share?
Oh, I'm sorry. I had the mute on. I was talking all this time and I didn't realize it. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Good morning. Thanks for taking the call. I was talking about, I thought it was interesting that you mentioned about the black doulas and the parenting, particularly because my wife and I, when we had our daughter, who's now 5 years old, we decided that we wanted a home birth. And we had a black midwife, and she taught us about the birthing process and told me about the role of a doula and what a doula does. And I got some information and educated myself so that I was able to function in the role as my wife's doula during our birthing process. And I find it interesting. I know a number of black doulas or females, and one of them in particular, she oftentimes assists in the birth of children, and not all of the births are black. Oftentimes, a few times, it's been white families. And what she pointed out to me is that it's interesting how often when she assists in these births, how surprised the white families act that she's actually a doula, as if, you know, it's a role that has been relegated to primarily white women. And when she points out to them that throughout slavery and even prior to that, we as a people, a body of people, did not have access to what they would classify as healthcare or a doctor. So it was up to on the plantation, and even prior to that, it was up to a black female, oftentimes a maternal figure on the plantation, to help throughout the birthing process and so forth. And what she tells me is that when she mentions that to many of them, they get very hostile. Like, they make it appear as if she's, for lack of a better term, being racist to them. And when she explains to them that her definition of racism doesn't allow her to practice racism against beneficiaries of racism, they become even more hostile. So I thought it was interesting that you brought that up, and particularly because whenever I share with folks that we had a home birth and that we had a black midwife, because we felt that it was important that the energy in our home and during our birthing process be African-centered, that we oftentimes get this pushback from folks who accuse us of, you know, being anti-white or something like that. That's what I wanted to share. Are you still there?
Appreciate that. That's not, no, I muted my line. I was just taking a second to, again, I don't have my normal microphone set up because I had no expectation of being on the air. Might be our, the lovely black female caller in Michigan. Did you have commentary?
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, good morning, Gus, and to whoever is on the call. I'm so excited that I found a way to participate. I'll share that with you via email, but I found a way to get back on the call. So I wanted to share my experience just as a black parent, and especially when I was pregnant with my oldest son. This was when I was, you know, a young, in my early 20s. And I really am thankful for my exposure or my brief encounter with the Nation of Islam here in Detroit, because a lot of the females that are, when I was in my 20s and I was a young, you know, just had no clue. This was my first pregnancy, just ignorant to a lot of what to do as it relates to going back and forth to the doctor and wanting to just have a healthy child. And when I was going back and forth to the doctor, you know, they're suggesting just vitamins. They're suggesting all these tests that they want to take. I remember specifically they were saying my blood pressure was up and I had to take all this, you know, go back and forth for testing. And then they wanted to induce my labor, which was frightening because this was my first child. I didn't know just the details of what that meant. And because I, at that time, it was just interesting how white doctors, I know I was intimidated and I was just like, well, the doctor said, and the doctor said, and the doctor said. And so I will always go back to a few of the sisters and that I had developed a relationship with here in the mosque here, and it was amazing because they would give me information and questions to ask, and I was able to ask pressing questions, and it just helped me to be more clear on the process. And I remember the doctors were just kind of confused, like, well, why are you asking these questions? And just, you know, in other words, just trust what I'm saying. It was interesting during that time. I also remember the information I got. I was very adamant about not vaccinating my children. Right when you give birth, they want to start poking your babies with needles, vaccines, and I was adamant about not having that happen. And I got a lot of pushback from the doctors. I got a lot of pushback from the nurses. And you just tell that I was being treated differently because they would say, oh, she doesn't want her children vaccinated. Make sure that the baby is in the room with her. It was just, you could tell, they treated me different. Another thing that I noticed is they definitely did not encourage breastfeeding. Luckily, I had a desire to want to breastfeed, but they were talking, you know, hey, we'll give you free formula. There was just all kind of resources available for the mothers who were not breastfeeding, but limited resources on, I know for me, and just trying to educate myself on how to get it done and, you know, how I could just get help in that area. So it was interesting, just that process with my oldest son. And as I, you know, became, you know, I have three children. And so each time I'm just thankful that I have the desire to learn more and try to, you know, because I didn't necessarily, after my first experience, I stopped trusting the doctors as much when I had my first son. I was all, you know, just engulfed. The doctor said, and it's just a difference now that I look back, how when you don't know, you hang on to every word that the doctors say. I notice also now how a lot of the doctors are choosing the date for you as to when you can have your baby, and that's not natural, you know. A lot of people that I know now that are pregnant, I'm like, oh, okay, do you know around when your due date is? And so I've noticed a lot of conversation is, oh, my doctor chose my date. I'm going to have the baby on such and such date. And I'm like, well, how does that work? Oh, they're just going to induce my labor. So it's just interesting how now, especially after reading Medical Apartheid and having more insight as to just the dangers of these doctors, I try my best to just do what I can to educate non-white people on just getting as much information as you can and not trusting the doctors as much. And so, I don't know. I just wanted to share that. I could go on and on about my experience from each childbirth, but it's just interesting at how rewarding I know it was for me nursing my children and just having that experience, and how that is not encouraged for non-white people. So I'll mute myself, but I'm excited to be able to participate.
Well, to hear you once again, as I stated, I think that could have been racist interference that kept you from being able to chime in before. But that's Shafia Monroe, the International Center for Traditional Childbearing. She said the same thing, that when black females wanting to do natural childbirth and not have racist ogres in a doctor's uniform poking and mutilating their child from day one, that it's, oh, wait a minute, there could be complications. That came up as well. Exact same conversation, that they try to intimidate you or make it seem like, you know, you're just making a terrible decision by ignoring these intelligent, wise, caring medical health professionals who are way more intelligent than you could ever be, and that you're just probably making an incompetent decision that's going to ruin your life. And they just try and make you feel bad, or you're messing it up, or you're doing something that's just really dangerous. And they're the ones that are really looking out for your best interests. Like, that exact conversation came up, and it's come up before. I think we talked about that a lot in terms of them just being able to, with Vernelia Randall, be able to just kind of intimidate you when they get in there and start talking fast and big words, and they'll have financial considerations as well. Black self-respect, and having someone else where you can do your research, where you can talk to. I think that was one of the things you were saying, just having a resource where you could go to some of the people with the Nation of Islam in your area and get information and talk to other black females, black mothers, and get some of their expertise. Same thing, just having a resource center. I think that's what Ms. Shafia Monroe, that's what she's attempting to do. Just having that as a resource to be able to offer constructive information, even if you decide you're going to go ahead and still go to the hospital, to just have a second opinion or to be able to have someone be there as an advocate for you to make sure that things are happening in accordance with your wishes, your will. With that, if folks had anything else they wanted to get in, this was not even planned. I was chilling. We did watch Black Mirror. I will say that because we did a lot of talking about racism. Watched Black Mirror. We watched episode one of season three, Nosedive, where Bryce Dallas Howard, her character, where she loses all of her social media points. That was pretty interesting dialogue as well. I think some of the people, they were familiar with Black Mirror already and the racist implications of the season. But that remains a hot item. Just throw that out there and see if people have seen it or if they have any thoughts on it. But just, again, I thought it was great. A very important topic. We should take being Black parents, attempted Black parents, very seriously, and bringing Black children into existence very seriously, and having a really detailed plan for what we're going to do, because racists, they already got their plan and it is working to perfection about the destruction of Black children even before they are born. So it's something that we should have in mind, and as I said, just take it very, very seriously. It was great to be able, as I said, to just do a lot of listening and, you know, share a comment here too, but just talking about this subject matter and the impetus, I think the whole reason, just being able to say, even at a baby shower, hey, and really, if somebody had pressed me about it, I mean, hey, if we're talking about a Black child being born, I mean, whoo, isn't that a serious topic? Don't you think this child might end up racism being a problem for this child that everybody here says they're so concerned about, right? We got all these diapers and onesies and cards and everything else, right? Don't you think racism is going to jeopardize the health and well-being of this Black child? Right, but like I said, nobody pressed me on it to my face. I don't know. Things went there, but it was great. And as I said, the two people that I was most concerned with, they thumbs up, thumbs up, thumbs up. And that's all that really matters to begin with. And again, if you can cultivate relationships where, you know, talking about racism is always acceptable and encouraged. Anybody?
Cliff, can I be heard 1 second?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I think it was definitely divinely orchestrated for me to be part of this call today, because back when my daughter was born, I had kept a journal throughout the pregnancy about my doula experience and learning and the notes and all of that. And then I got so much information that afterwards my wife was like, you should do a workshop or do a course and call it Daddy Doula. And I thought about it, and then I got kind of sidetracked and I never did it. And then just yesterday I saw the journal and all these pages, and I was like, wow, something that I never really finished. And I thought it was useful information to pass along to other parents, and I share it with other men that I would meet over the years in conversation, but I never shared it with anyone. But if anyone who is listening who is a parent or attempted parent, and they have any information that they would like to share, if they could reach out to you and you could connect them with me, I think that I could compile the information and put it together as a book. Since I do write books for other people, I think it would be a really rapid process for me to get together. So if anybody's interested, just reach out. Just wanted to share that.
That's spectacular. I don't even have children and I'm interested. Like that's spectacular. I think that's a resource we definitely, need. No expecting parents there. I suspect they might be interested as well, but that's the exact type of resources that we need. Like I said, just taking it seriously. I think that I say it consistently, the enthusiasm and excitement that I see generated when it's time to talk about sexual intercourse between white people and non-white people, that same enthusiasm should be there for, you know, really any aspect of racism, white supremacy, especially this. I mean, wow. I mean, it should be even more, in my opinion, because I mean, this is serious business. This gets right to, I know Dr. Welsing, she certainly would echo that, saying when you play around with sex, the joke is on the offspring. This is super, super serious. And again, you know, if we don't want to take it seriously, the Jerry Sanduskys are out there. Racist predators of all sorts. Nothing is more vulnerable than a black child in the system of white supremacy. So just having that in the forefront of our mind, that's outstanding. I commend you, and I'm sure, Estat, I'm sure some people would be interested. So absolutely. I think the energy, you were already getting those signals about, I guess, an assignment that you could be on that I think would be super constructive and super appreciated. So I will pass along any information I get. If someone, if folks email me that they would, you know, like to get whatever you compile, I'll pass it along. And if you give it to me when it's finished, if it's a book format or whatever it is, I'll post it online and make sure that listeners know about it. They can access it.
Thanks.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Anything else folks want to make sure they get in before we wrap up our unscheduled program at this ungodly hour?
I wanted to just share as well. I think that's an awesome project and idea, Estat. I would love to I think about baby showers and all the gifts that people give, like you say, you know, diapers, onesies, things like that, things the baby will outgrow. But one thing that I know as a parent that I appreciated the most was information. And, you know, because I had a genuine concern of wanting to, you know, make the correct decisions as a new mother. You get so much information. You get bombarded with so, you know, people saying what you should do. And this is what I, you know, and you don't know what information necessarily is correct. I know that was my experience. But, you know, just having a book or having something like that, where you can read, where you can just kind of just have it as a resource, I think it's so helpful. That would be something that I would give as a gift, especially to young parents, young mothers. So I think that's a great project. I'll send my Gus, I think you have my information, but I definitely want to just add on or just share a little bit of my experience or whatever I can to just assist you in that project. But I think it's great. And again, that would be something I would like to give as gifts, as opposed to things, like diapers and onesies and things like that. Not saying that that's not important, but I know that for me, books, information was very valuable. So.
That's right. I know, share medical apartheid, try to get killing the black body as well. I already shared Miss Shafia Monroe's website and what have you, but I will be passing that along as well. I think that sort of information, just so you can have the correct mindset in terms of how serious this is and the war that's being waged against us. Anybody else, if you are listening, I saw other folks dialed in since we've been on. Anybody else, if you had a quick hand, because this was not planned, and just wanted to give a quick word. I almost am looking at this as taking notes so that I'll have an audio record that this took place, and then I can write it out to flesh out a little more detail about the experience. But I did think it was noteworthy and might be of some constructive value to listeners. If you're on the line, if you have a quick word you want to get in, you should get your hand up in the next 30 seconds, 641-715-3640, and the code is 564-943-pound. Press *6 if you would like to participate. We should be here this week. We're finishing Gwen Ifill's The Breakthrough on Friday. Thursday is always Workplace Racism. Compensatory Call-In is this Saturday. The Global Sunday Talk on Racism is Sunday. Woo! We are a little less than 2 weeks away from the inauguration of Donald Trump. I do plan on acting a fool on that Friday, but that is down the road and will require some hard work because I also want to make it kind of a retrospective on Obama's time at the White House and play some of the more memorable moments of him being there over the last 8 years or so. And I'm going to have a great time because I did not enjoy him being in the White House. I did not celebrate what he won. But I am going to have a party when he exits on the 20th. Man alive, that is going to be a great Friday. In the meantime, I will assume folks are good. I didn't see any extra hands. I'll assume folks are satisfied. Nothing else to add? Right on. I, again, just encourage folks, take it seriously. Dr. Welsing, she talked about that all the time, that you play around with sex, the joke is on the offspring. We should really look at bringing a black child into existence under the system of white supremacy, as, you know, really one, if not the most, certainly one of the most important endeavors, activities that a human, a black human, can engage in on this planet. I mean, it should be extreme. I said this last week when that video went out of that young girl being thrown on the ground in North Carolina. I said then, hey, before we even get to the bedroom, there should be extensive dialogue about what plan do we have in place to make sure that is never our black child, to the best of our ability. We're still on the plantation. We can't even protect ourselves. We got to be honest about that. We got to be honest with our children about that as well. That can be a painful thing also. But hey, we are going to have a plan. This cannot be just willy-nilly and, you know, we just take it as it comes and see what happens. No. We got to have a plan. Where are we looking at our child? What's our school plan for the first 10 years of our child's life? These are the type of conversations we got to have before we get to the bedroom. That would be the best way to operate under the system of white supremacy, because whites, they for sure had their plan together way before we got to the bedroom, before we even met. They had their plan together for the destruction of your black child. That's what racism, white supremacy means. With that, we will wrap. I hope it was constructive. I am going to go take a nap. I want to make sure I get my time stamp. So it is 3:13 a.m. Pacific time for folks on the East Coast. That would be 6:13 a.m. for our people in the UK. This is one of the few times we did an early broadcast. That would be 11:13 a.m. Monday morning for folks over London, England area. Hope you all have a constructive week. If you get confused, you have questions, feel free to drop an email, untiljustice@gmail.com, untiljustice@gmail.com. Listener-supported, counter-racist radio. Invest if you think the program is constructive. racism-notes.blogspot.com, racism-notes.blogspot.com. You will see the PayPal button in the top right corner. If you're not into PayPal, drop me an email. We will get you a physical mailing address. Huge thanks to all the folks who have supported us down through the years. 8-year anniversary coming up next month. I hope we have not just been wasting time on air. I hope we have helped folks get a better grasp of our problem, white people, and some ideas about things that we can do, counter-racist suggestions to help us get this problem solved as soon as possible. With that, I again state sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. Certainly, if you are a pregnant mother, man, oh man, but say that all the time. And again, just minimizing problems. We already got enough issues. We do not need to make our situation any more risky by being under the influence of tobacco, alcohol, cannabis, anything else, and then have that be the day that we bump into a race soldier, badge or no, and have to do some explaining in a situation that could mean our life being extinguished in a matter of seconds. I don't think being intoxicated is going to help us neutralize that situation and come out on top alive at all. And I think the evidence shows that clearly. That said, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.